Our speaker this evening is Brother John Manson, and he has asked us to read from Psalms 66. Psalm 66. Make a joyful noise unto God, all ye lands. Sing forth the honor of his name. Make his praise glorious. Say unto God, how terrible art thou in thy works. Through the greatness of thy power shall thine enemies submit themselves unto thee. All the earth shall worship thee and shall sing unto thee. They shall sing to thy name, Selah. Come and see the works of God. He is terrible in his doing toward the children of men. He turned the sea into dry land. They went through the flood on foot. There did we rejoice in him. He ruleth by his power forever. His eyes behold the nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves. Selah. O bless our God, ye people, and make the voice of his praise to be heard, which holdeth our soul in life, and suffereth not our feet to be moved. For thou, O God, hast proved us. Thou hast tried us as silver is tried. Thou broughtest into the net. Thou laidest affliction upon our loins. Thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. I will go into thy house with burnt offerings. I will pay thee my vows, which my lips have uttered and my mouth has spoken when I was in trouble. I will offer unto thee burnt sacrifices of fatlings with the incense of rams. I will offer bullocks with goats, Selah. Come and hear, all ye that fear God, and I will declare what he have done for my soul. I cried unto him with my mouth, and he was extolled with my tongue. If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me. But verily, God hath heard me. He have attended to the voice of my prayer. Blessed be God, which have not turned away my prayer, nor his mercy from me. Let us now give our attention to Brother John.
Good evening. Is that coming through, or I need to crank it a bit? Up. Got the up sign. I can raise it up, but it might... How's that? We got everybody? Great. Good evening. Through this evening, I want to talk about creation. We'll be doing it through verses and pictures, trying to stimulate your thoughts into action. Pictures and words help do that. If you don't like pictures, they're mine. They might be not up to your quality. That's just the way it is. This evening, we want to look at and examine the creation process through scriptures and images. We'll look at the significance of both numbers and science. My background is in science. Science is an important theology, I guess you could call it, in this modern world. And it has an effect on how we believe. It is hoped that as you view the images, you'll ponder the creative process and the work that Yahweh has done. We read in the Psalm this evening about David and how he knew the hand of the Lord was in all the physical attributes of the world, as well as the directing his life. And we'll look at more of the physical aspects. As you see, the rain has started coming down, the land is cooling off, those cold temperatures way up in the upper atmosphere are coming down really quick, and the temperature's dropping really nice. So you can see here that, and I've found out over the years, my wife has always complained that I never seem to take pictures of people. As I got older, I sort of realized that people sort of spoil the picture. Not the present company, perhaps, but when you think about it, if you look at the creation, if you look at the pictures of the earth around us, some of the images I have, you can see the hand of God. Even though the earth has been cursed, you can still see the pattern of the Almighty. When you put people in the picture, I guess the sin aspect sort of comes through, and it clouds the image that we're trying to see. And I think that's probably the answer why I like pictures without people. The creation of Yahweh was very good. I think it's the people that messed it up. While the earth was cursed, we can look at it closely and see the hand of Yahweh in the untouched wilderness around us. The creation account in Genesis concentrates on the establishment of the earth, but leaves little doubt that the same Creator is responsible for the creation of the universe as well. There is little indication how much time passed between the creation of the universe and the formation of the earth. We cannot know for certain, but I have difficulty believing that the Creator went for very long without populating the earth. It is also hard to understand what the Creator did before the universe was formed, and we'll not know that until the Kingdom Age, I presume. So the verse from Psalm 66 that we can look at is, "Come and see what God has done, how awesome His works in man's behalf." So we have a rugged picture of rock. That's Canadian rock. That's the oldest rock. That's the rock that was formed in the beginning. Good old Canadian granite. Those trees still managed to scratch out a living in that rock. To most of us, as we ponder that image, we can think of ourselves, how we try to scratch out a living in this earth. When you look at the root systems those trees have, there's very little nourishment, yet the roots go down, they find water, they find a little bit of nourishment, and those trees grow. To most people, you'd say, just give up and die. You have no hope of surviving in that rocky environment. A good lesson in perseverance when you ponder it. Here we have another nice piece of granite. If you look closely, you can see the image of fishermen's nets. Think back to the scriptural reference of the fishermen's nets. A place to dry nets, common practice from biblical times up to the last century. Fishermen used cotton, natural fiber nets. Anybody familiar with natural fiber nets in salt water? They do not work well together. You may have been thinking that they were drying the nets, just drying the cotton on the rocks. That's probably not the full picture. In this location, the fishermen used to tar the nets to protect the cotton. They'd coat the nets, they'd make a big tar vat, coat the nets in tar, and lay them out on the rocks to dry. And that's the imprint of the tar image after many decades. So with this as our backdrop, let us consider the power of Yahweh. What characteristics are necessary for the Creator of the universe? This is man using the things that were provided. Let's look at what the Creator, the Almighty, what Yahweh has done for us, and what His characteristics must be. These are important to keep in your mind as we look around us and ponder the images and life we see. Obviously, the Creator must be independent, completely independent of His creation. The Creator cannot be dependent on any of the things that He created for His existence. The Creator must be above and beyond the boundaries of His creation. He must be infinite, infinitely powerful. Logic tells us that an effect cannot be greater than the cause. Therefore, the Creator must be greater in power than anything in the universe. In fact, He must be greater than the sum of all powers in the universe. The Creator must exist outside time. Nothing in the universe can go back before the creation event, but the Creator must, if He started the process. He is without beginning or end. From His perspective, outside of time, beginnings and endings are meaningless. He owes His existence to nothing else. The Creator must be spiritual. Logically, we see that only a creator outside the universe is the only kind that could create it. The creator must interact within the dimensions of time and space, but must itself be beyond them. Yahweh must be spirit. No images were allowed to be made of God, as if he were merely a physical God who belonged to this world. Solomon said, "But will God really dwell on earth? The heavens, even the highest heavens, cannot contain you. How much less this temple I have built?" The creator must be all-knowing. It is reasonable to assume that the creator of all that is and knows all about his own creation. Albert Einstein said, "The harmony of natural law reveals an intelligence of such superiority that compared with it, all the systematic thinking and acting of human beings is an utterly insignificant reflection. All our natural laws fit together in a unified framework. They work together with precision to make life possible. There is a supreme rationale behind them. All these must surely be known by the one who set them up." We need some background information. When you start looking at creation, you're in the real world. When you get outside and talk to your friends and the evolutionist point starts to come up, numbers always come to the forefront. You can't talk to friends or colleagues for very long without numbers getting in the way. Words like chance and probability are the words we use to classify or put a framework around the odds of something happening. We are comfortable by putting those bounds on the subject. And when someone puts odds on something, you perhaps think it might be possible. Let's take an example. Just this spring, up our way, it was reported that two golfers from the same group — I don't golf, so I don't know much about how difficult this would be — but two golfers from the same group, one after the other, got a hole in one on the same hole. Everybody thought that was a miraculous event. So we must understand the size of numbers. The odds, calculated by those who know better, calculated the odds of two consecutive golfers, each getting a hole in one on the same hole, one after the other, is 23 million to 1. Or that number at the bottom, 23 times 10 to the 6th. So remember that. We'll use it later. 23 times 10 to the 6th are the odds of two of you, if you're golfers, getting a hole in one after the other. Two other numbers: the population of the United States, 319 million. The world population, 7 billion. Before we continue, we must cover one significant fact about science. In many cases, it is necessary to believe and rely on a false theory, even when the facts are overwhelmingly against it. One can rely on it to provide accurate information necessary to further a particular science. Let us look at one example that I personally have relied upon. Can you successfully believe a lie? So again, ponder the need for science to create a reliable model to explain what they see in spite of the evidence we see. Is it wrong to successfully believe in a lie in the scientific world? Celestial navigation, developed many years ago, copied by the GPS system to replace the stars and planets by man's satellites. The celestial navigation is very accurate, allowed mariners to navigate the seas and the land for hundreds of years with a clock and a sextant, pictured here. But the premise of doing so is based upon a falsehood. For the purpose of celestial navigation, one must rely on the fact — you can put that in quotation marks if you want — that the Earth is the center, and all the heavenly bodies, the 52 navigational bodies, revolve around it. This, of course, is wrong. Even those who use a sextant know the foundation principles are wrong. Yet, as I said, it successfully allowed people to navigate the world to an accuracy of around 2 knots, 2 nautical miles. Reliance on a false foundation allowed our navies and air force to navigate. It got us through the world wars, it navigates our ships, and today they still use noon hour sights on ships to calibrate their gyro compasses and to confirm their position, and to keep up to date on the practice of celestial navigation in case the satellite system has to be taken offline. So were they in error to depend upon a false science? No, as long as they knew the limitations of the science and did not force other disciplines to accept their view of the astronomical bodies. So ponder that image. A detailed instrument designed to measure very accurately the angle of a heavenly body to the horizon, usually made of nice brass, costing a couple of $1,000s, or unless you buy the plastic ones. And the celestial sphere, the earth at the center, and all the heavenly bodies moving around it. You can calculate the position of any one of those bodies to its position over top of the surface of the earth mathematically with formulas to a great accuracy. An error that science relies on. So we looked at the celestial sphere. Have you considered just how big it is? This is an image of just one atom, taken with an electron microscope and enhanced with some color. There are an estimated, another number, 10 to the 82. That's 10 followed by 82 zeros, or 1 followed by 82 zeros. Big number. That's the number of atoms in the total universe. Doesn't seem to be overwhelming when you look at it that way. Remember that number. It's key to understanding and putting reason to the so-called science of evolution. 10 to the 82. Let's go back and look at what the scriptures say about creation. Unless you have any doubt, I want you to believe, and I firmly believe, that the earth was definitely created in 7 days. The last day being the rest day. That's 7 24-hour periods, assuming the sun traveled around the earth, or the earth traveled around the sun and rotated it once every 24 hours. Let's look at some images and verses that describe the truth of the creation process. This is not a hypothesis, this is the truth of the matter. A simple, even poetic statement of fact. We see the mountains created, the water, the trees, a beautiful, relaxing picture. Before the mountains were born, you brought forth the earth and the world. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Canada Goose, standing watch over the rocks, more likely a nest down in the bushes. The simplicity of the words of creation requires faith in Yahweh. Through faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God. So the things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. Who created these hills and the trees? Who created the processes that govern their interaction? Who created the shelter for the boats, the sky, the beauty and the symmetry that we see in the creation process? For thus says Yahweh, who created the heavens, who is God who formed the earth and made it, who established it, who did not create it in vain, who formed it to be inhabited? I am Yahweh, and there is no other. With the bird in the air, the physical contrasted with the spiritual, and he built his sanctuary like the heights, like the earth, which he established forever. Light separated from darkness the first day. Not just separated, but done in a way that provides beauty and enjoyment each and every time we see a sunset. So it's not just words on a paper that he created. He created in a way that is beautiful, in a way that we understand and can look at and enjoy. The colors, the contrasts, the textures. He created all of that. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So evening and morning were the first day. Very simple statement. The evening and morning were the first day. Yet every time we look at a sunset, we marvel at the beauty of it. The second day, he divided the waters. Again, why has Yahweh seen fit to ensure that the image of the water can calm us? They provoke such emotion in each of us. We can stare at the water and the sea for hours. Why are we drawn to it? Then God said, "Let the firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it be divided from the waters, divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. So it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, so the evening and morning were the second day. Storm clouds. We just saw them outside pass over. In this picture, a storm is brewing to the north of us. The power of the heavens can unleash such a torrent of rain and wind. Regardless of your belief, men attribute the storm and power to a heavenly being. We know the truth and take comfort in the revealed presence of Yahweh. When we look at those clouds build, we know it was his plan, and it's his purpose. Continually reminded of the creation process. The gods that have not made the heavens and the earth shall perish from heaven and from under those heavens. He has made the earth by his power. He has established the world by his wisdom. He has stretched out the heavens at his discretion. When he utters his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causes the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He makes lightning for the rain. He brings wind out of his treasures. Words to remember as the storms pass over. On the third day, the dry ground was formed and the vegetation grew. Here's a picture of a very simple mosses and lichens growing on a rock. We walk over it, may ignore it. Again, finding life on a granite surface. Yet when you look closely, again, there's beauty, symmetry. Each of those relying on the other for sustenance. That's what was created. Can we picture that coming by any other way than by the power of God? And he put it together in a way that each of us can find enjoyment, whether it to be laid down on its soft moss, takes the pressure off us when we recline in the hot sun, rather than laying on the granite. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear," and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and gathered together the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, and herb yielding seed, and fruit trees yielding fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herbs that yield seed according to its kind, and the trees that yield fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God said that it was good. So the evening and morning were the third day. Simple, succinct statements, but encompassing vast, complex systems that were set up and that we can enjoy when we watch the pictures and look for ourselves at nature and the world around us. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and morning were the fourth day. Is it by fortunate accident that the stars and the planets are perfectly organized in position and movement to allow us to navigate the globe? Is it merely a coincidence that the movement can be calculated and their position on Earth with great accuracy, allowing us to use this information? Did we just stumble over that by accident, or was that part of the design? The fifth day, animals of the deep, a very large snapping turtle. This turtle visits this particular anchorage. It tours each of the boats that are anchored there precisely at dinner time, looking for handouts. Once the dinner hour is gone, the turtle disappears. Strange. It's a rather ancient, craggy animal, moss-covered, slightly ornery, but hasn't hurt anybody. Then God said, "Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures. Let the birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens." So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." So the evening and morning were the fifth day. On the sixth day, he created man. This is an example of what we've done, what we're capable of doing, soaring to the heights, marrying the water and the land and the air. I guess a float plane is the perfect example of that. Amphibious floats handle the land, water, and air. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." On the seventh day, there was rest. We have taken a quick look at who God is and what he did in the beginning. In 6 days, he did all of what we see around us, both the symmetry, the beauty. We've seen that he is still involved in the earth, ensures that his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We have all the elements together, and they form one harmonious picture. We have the rock, the water, the sea, the land, and an individual. Therefore, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed the gospel was preached to us all, as well as to them. But the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter that rest, as he has said, "So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest." Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he has spoken a certain place of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience, again he designates a certain day, saying in David, "Today, after such a long time, as it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterwards have spoken of another day. To think and to ponder about that day of rest that we can look forward to, based upon our faith that we get from the scriptures, and our faith that we get from looking at his creation. Did all this come from chance or design? Do the numbers make sense? Let us take a look at where the numbers take us, remembering that it is not so bad for a scientist to believe in a false premise. A scientist can successfully believe in a lie if it meets the requirements and he can make measurements from it. The chance model. Darwinists are not the slightest dismayed at such improbability, for they can always fall back on the claim that however improbable the accidents needed for the first protein molecules to come into being, they must have come about, or else we would not be here. Same with the two golfers. What would you think the probability would be of me getting a hole in one and then you getting one right after me? I guess you would, if it happened, you'd say, well, it happened, so it must be good. Let's look at some numbers from the scientists' numbers, obviously not the numbers that I believe in or you believe in, but they give the following. The age of the Earth at 4.6 billion years. The age of the first formation of sedimentary rock at 3.8 billion years. The oldest fossil, 3.2 billion years. So if you make a subtraction of those numbers, the chance model has an available window of 600 million years in which to develop life. That means self-replicating DNA in a biological container to house and nourish this fragile molecule. They have no problem in calculating the odds of that happening, and they say that the odds of life by chance is 1 in 10 to the 65th power. And that means life by chance. It doesn't necessarily mean this life, it means any life. If you get more specific on this specific life, the numbers get worse. So we have that number again, 10 to the 82 atoms in the total universe. Now look at the odds of complex life developing on its own, like picking a specific atom from a container that is half the total number of atoms in the universe. So 1 in 10 to the 64th, so the odds of life happening by chance is pretty much take all the atoms in the universe, take half of that package, and pick out one specific atom. That's the order of magnitude of the complexity that they have to accept. Not very promising. The building blocks of life. This is all chemistry. Life can be broken down into a few steps. Now, this is not as detailed as some of you chemists or medical people might like, but it's the basics. There's three components needed for life: amino acids, hemoglobin, and DNA. I said there's a bit more, but let's keep it simple. Amino acids, these are some of the ones that are useful in human existence. Amino acids are the building blocks of our bodies. They are grouped together to form larger molecules, and each grouping determines the function that the new molecule will have. They have to exist first before the life process can be completed. But understanding, there has to be some plan or direction needed, some understanding between the forces of chance to know what the future use of these would be. You got to get that complex piece of logic going there. The only way I can understand it is, if I decide to deliver a load of blocks to Brother Darwin, he may thank me, but he may have no idea what he's supposed to do with them. Likewise, you could develop by accident, perhaps, with some probability thrown into it, a certain amino acid, but without any idea going forward of what that thing might be used for, how are you going to do anything with it? You've got to understand, when you look at what we see today and look backwards, it all looks like it fits together, but moving forward, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So now we took those amino acids and got into real complex chemistry. They group together to form hemoglobin. That's a protein molecule that's in red blood cells and carries oxygen from the lungs and body tissues and returns carbon dioxide. Very complex molecule, set of molecules, and that's some pictures of it, sizes and whatnot. The amino acid sequence of any polypeptide created by a cell is in turn determined by the stretches of DNA called genes. In all proteins, it is the amino acid sequence that determines the protein's chemical properties and functions. So right away, we have some very complex problems of hemoglobin, and then we got the molecules, and then we got the iron-containing molecules, etc., and hemoglobin. Again, the probability of developing that accidentally is 10 to the 850th power. But as you'll be told, well, it must have happened because we got them. These aren't religious numbers trying to make it look difficult. These are actual scientific numbers put together on the chance of this happening. Again, we got probabilities way in excess of picking one atom out of the total universe. You got your favorite atom picked out, not this atom, the other atom. DNA gets more complex now because the DNA has to have an understanding of what's moving forward. So we have to build amino acids, combine them in sequences to form hemoglobin according to the pattern expressed in the DNA. So DNA is an instruction booklet that was pre-designed to carry these instructions to allow the body to replicate and have purpose. Here, the probability of it being developed into what we see today is 10 to the 7,800. Now, given the fact that you've got perhaps, as they say, 600 million years to develop that, every chance could not have happened right off the bat. Can you see that even 600 million years isn't a lot of time if you've got 10 to the 7,800 power to make all those choices? You're going to make a lot of bad choices before it actually works out, so you're making several good choices every few seconds in an environment not friendly to creating these molecules. There's an infinitely better chance of selecting one specific atom from all the universe than DNA being formed accidentally. So either every golfer in the United States has just made a hole in one right after the person before them on the same hole without making a mistake, so the first time someone misses, we start all over again, or creation took place. You can believe, I guess, either one, but the odds and what we see around us and the creation model makes far more sense. Unless you're a scientist and you have to believe the lie in order to explain the complex chemistry involved, the same as we do when we're doing celestial navigation. There's a choice. Take your chances with man and worship the creature, the creation, who exchanges the truth for God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator, who is blessed forever. That's basically what took place. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, Yahweh, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor weary. His understanding is unsearchable. That is the statement that confounds the world. He's unsearchable. We cannot understand the complexity of the interaction of those molecules, the complexity of that that is turned into each and every one of us, and every animal on the planet exists because of that pattern that was established and understood from the very first few days. We can look further at the animal life, the symbiotic relationships. Coral reefs also resemble the rainforests. In a way, lush, complex ecosystem sustains itself despite the lack of nutrients. The coral reefs, if you've dove on them, are clear. They're clear because there's no nutrients in the water. They sustain themselves regardless of that. The crystalline waters of the tropics achieve their breathtaking clarity because there are virtually no nutrients. Yet reef communities thrive in these ecological deserts, largely because of the ceaseless labors of an animal called a coral polyp. Builders of these stony masses we call reefs. Polyps are the cornerstone of the community. Colonies of coral polyps entered a remarkable partnership with algae, allowing them not only to use solar energy to manufacture food by photosynthesis, but to consume small plankton animals as well. One of the most beneficial results of the partnership is the mysterious ability to accrete calcium carbonate from seawater to fashion stony strongholds. The shelter coral polyps provide for themselves attracts a myriad of creatures that compose the reef ecosystems. And many creatures make the coral reefs their home. They live in symbiotic relationships, together in a living environment, one relying on the other. Mutualistic symbiosis, where both partners benefit from association. These exist not only in corals, but in some jellyfish and even giant clams, which incorporate algae in their tissue to reap the benefits of photosynthesis. The best example that we have is metamorphosis. It's a biological process by which an animal physically develops after birth or hatching, involving a conspicuous and relatively abrupt change in the animal's body structure through cell growth and differentiation. We've all seen this, where a larvae turns itself into a moth. What encourages the larvae to decide to spin a cocoon, to turn itself into a gelatinous mass, and then emerge as a butterfly or moth? Realizing that the DNA for that process, the DNA for the moth or the butterfly, must have existed in the larvae. Ponder that. The larvae go through various molts because they have a rigid skeletons on the outside. The insect can only grow by periodically shedding. We're called molting. It recurs periodically and repeatedly during the development. At the final molt, an adult emerges. In several insects' order, the adult looks entirely different from the larvae that preceded it. So what causes the larvae to either molt or to turn into a butterfly? There's three chemicals. The first one is this PTTH, which is composed of 109 amino acids. The second one is a juvenile hormone. And then the third one is this ecosone hormone. So there are two prothorax glands located in the thorax of the larvae. So under the influence of this 109, this PTTH system, the ecosone is triggered every molt. So this top number there, it triggers the molt. So when that chemical is present, it triggers the adult or the larvae to molt and continue to do so. If the juvenile hormone is present, it stays as a larvae. If the third hormone is present, then it turns into the pupa and then into the adult as the butterfly. There's the pictures of some of those chemicals. So those two glands, people have gone in and messed with them by operation, remove them, and then the thing that molt doesn't happen, replace them somewhere in the body and the chemicals are present, and then it takes place. So that's what causes this dramatic molt to take place. If you mess with the chemicals, you can go down the side and you can actually have a tiny, tiny molt to take place and cause a small adult if you play with the chemicals, or you can let them grow and produce a huge larvae and then molt into a large adult, depending on the absence or composition of those hormones. So this wasn't an accident. It didn't happen by chance. It was purely the design of Yahweh. There's no way to look at this and look at the odds of these happening without having an awe of the power of Yahweh. Adding the chances and the odds of it happening and then looking at the 7-day creation process. So we look at Yahweh's view as a designer. Some images and verses that describe the truth of the creation process. This is a different perspective that we take. We focus on Yahweh rather than man. From Yahweh's perspective, the harmony between the rocks, the water, the trees, and the sky and the clouds. Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night shows knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. From the heavens to the words spoken, Yahweh knows all. Thus saith God the Lord, he that created the heavens and stretched them out, he that spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of it, he that giveth breath unto the people upon it, and spirit to them that walk therein. I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness, and will hold thy hand, and will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant to the people, for a light to the Gentiles. Very personal words spoken by Yahweh to his son, written down long before his birth. But through the love of Yahweh to his son, he penned these words to encourage and strengthen him. To obey Yahweh provides hope. Chance is not part of the deal. He has formed a covenant with his people through his own son. Yahweh, all-powerful, all-knowing, has taken an interest in the people of his creation. So what's next? We have briefly looked at the work of Yahweh in creation in a way that I hope stimulates each of you to further examine what was created, discover the wonders that Yahweh has done, then consider that he also has concern for us. This week we have the opportunity to strengthen one another, to learn from his word and what our purpose is, to assist each other in that walk that will lead to eternal life. Family of ducks. The earth in its raw state behind them. We have taken a quick look at who Yahweh is and what he did in the beginning. We have seen that he is still involved in the earth and is ensuring that his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It is evident that God is very strong in identification of the creation itself. He uses creation as a witness to himself, as well as saying, in effect, see this, all this, I made it. It is mine. I think we should do no less when talking to others about our Lord. At some point it needs to be stated, see all this? See the heavens and the earth and all down to the tiniest subatomic particles? God made it. He did it. It is his. Looking to creation, then, as evidence for God and his power and his provision. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings thou hast ordained strength because of thine enemies, that thou might still the enemy and the avenger. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him? and the Son of Man that thou visitest him. For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou made him to have dominion over the works of thy hand. Thou hast put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, yea, and the beasts of the field, the fowls of the air and the fish of the seas, and whatsoever passes through the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth. Thank you.